Welcome back to the Make or Break show, where each week we're bringing stories of incredible makers and the make or break moments that have defined them along the way. I'm your host, Brandon Cullum, and this week we chat with architect and woodworker Frank Howarth. From turning on the lathe to stop motion to CNC technology, Frank has been raising the ball for all of us for over a decade. All right, welcome back to the show. I hope you are doing amazing. We have a really fun episode for you this week. We're hanging out with one of the original content creators who continues to push the bar as on his video production, as well as just the amazing woodworking projects that he's doing. We've got the one and the only Frank Howarth hanging out with us today. This is a fun one. But as always, before we get into that, thank you guys so much for the support. I think I mentioned it on the last episode, but we had the biggest month in terms of downloads ever for this podcast. Thank you for, if you've just started listening, I know a lot of you may have come in when we had Chris Schwarz on a few weeks back. Thank you for sticking around. Hope you guys are continuing to enjoy these interviews, or if you've been with me since the very beginning, thank you so much. If you do like the show and you want to support it, the best way that you can do that is over on Patreon. There's a bunch of different levels of things that you guys can sign up for. But any support is amazing. That is patreon.com/makeorbreakshow. Or if you don't want to do that, which is totally fine, just the fact you're listening is amazing, but you would like to support in a different way, leaving a rating and or review over on iTunes is awesome. You can literally give me a 1-star, let me know what I could do better. But any feedback is great. So those are a couple ways that you guys can support the show. All right, so getting into this week's show, we are hanging out with Frank Howarth. You guys can check him out at frankmakes.com or Frank Howarth over on YouTube as well as Instagram. He has an architecture background. He actually went to Cornell, and then he got his master's at Harvard. So he is the real deal, and his stuff definitely shows it. And then he has kind of been a hobbyist woodworker his whole life. And then within the last, I guess, several years, he's gotten more full-time into the woodworking side of things, leaving the architecture industry. And he brings that aesthetic to his work in his woodworking. He built his own shop. There's this incredible series on YouTube. I'm going to include a link in the show notes where he walks through the build of his shop. And his shop is just amazing. You guys really need to check it out. It's full of these really old tools as well as some new technology like CNC. And he is just making some amazing things, especially on the wood turning side of things. You guys might have seen his Death Star, which I think was the first thing that I saw that he did, as well as his eyeball here more recently. He's just doing amazing projects. And then also, if you've ever seen someone do an intro on YouTube or anywhere that's stop motion on the making side of things, more than likely that came from Frank. So he does these really cool stop motion, just animations in the middle of his builds, as well as he just explains everything so, so well. So Frank is amazing. And this is a really fun interview. So two housekeeping items before we get in, though. First off, I had his levels turned up a little hot on my end, and so he's kind of blown out. And so I'm sorry about that. I tried to turn it down and try to fix it a little bit. But hopefully it's not going to bug you guys too much. I apologize about that. And then second, Frank mentioned this before we started recording, is he has a little bit of a stutter, which if you've watched his videos is incredible. You would have no idea. And so you'll probably hear that every now and then, but just let you know that's kind of going to be part of it as well. But the overblown audio, that is totally my fault. So sorry about that. But without further ado, let's jump into our interview with Frank. All right, guys, welcome back to the Make or Break show. We're hanging out with woodworker extraordinaire. Probably you have the most envious shop, I think, of anyone in kind of the YouTube making world, but Mr. Frank Howarth, thank you so much for jumping on and chatting with us.
Yeah, sure.
So you are in Portland, Oregon, which is crazy. What's like the woodworking community like, especially on the West Coast? A lot of our listeners probably are up and down kind of the Eastern Seaboard, but just to give people kind of perspective, like what's it like out there?
I mean, it's definitely here and strong. I always joke that there's tons of wood out here as far as, you know, trees and finding logs to mill up and that kind of thing, but there's so many people that want it that it's hard to find free wood to mill.
Gotcha. What type of wood or what type of trees are prevalent?
I mean, out here it's a lot of softwood, but you do find maple and walnut. And some oak too.
Okay, that's cool. So, did you grow up then out there?
I grew up in Honolulu.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
So were you? So were you born in Hawaii?
Yeah, I was born there and grew up there, and then went off to school on the East Coast.
Where on the East Coast?
I went to Cornell.
Oh wow! Okay. What was your major?
I majored in architecture.
Architecture, okay.
Which I found fit in nicely with the woodworking because it gave me a design background.
So when you were going through Cornell, like was like the professional architecture route, like was that kind of the direction you were wanting to go?
Yeah.
And did you work in the architecture field for a little bit?
Oh yeah, yeah. I did that for 15 years or so.
Oh geez, was it like residential, commercial?
More a commercial kind of stuff.
Okay, that's crazy. So going way back then to Hawaii, you're definitely our first, I guess, Hawaiian we've ever had on the show. Did when you were growing up, the whole building and making this kind of been with you, it sounds like, for a long time. Was that part of your childhood?
Yeah, in different ways. I mean, my parents were more in the science profession,
okay,
and not so much in the art scene. But I went to a small school when I, you know, for my first few years of schooling up until seventh grade was a small kind of school that was really loose. And we basically spent most of the days doing projects of different sorts, you know, art stuff.
So were you like working with a bunch of different mediums, or like when did you kind of first mess around with some woodworking tools?
That probably wasn't so much until college.
Okay.
I mean, a little bit here and there before that, but you know, I had shop class in junior high, I think.
So you said your parents were scientists. What fields?
My dad studies insects.
Okay, cool. And what'd you say your mom did?
She taught high school science.
Okay, cool. So was the jump then from Hawaii to Cornell on the completely other side of the country, was that like a big deal for you or for your family? Like, was that unusual?
Yeah, I mean, that was a pretty big trip. I mean, it meant I didn't come home on weekends and that kind of thing.
Right, yeah.
And definitely the weather was different and the culture was different. But I mean, both my parents are from the East Coast, so I sort of knew a little bit of the, you know, the feel for that just from home. So
was it just a job that brought your family to Hawaii initially?
Yeah, my dad was finishing up his PhD. They were in Laos for 2 years.
Okay.
And in the sort of late 60s, and my dad was finishing up his PhD, and he did that at the University of Hawaii.
Okay.
Then he got a job there and never left.
Gotcha. That's crazy. So when you made that, or kind of why did you pick Cornell in architecture?
That's a good question. I mean, at the time, it felt like architecture was a good mix of the art and the science and the math that I liked during high school. So it seemed like that made sense. You know, it wasn't so much of the science that I didn't really want to do. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't something that didn't have art in it, like, you know, business or, you know, something like that. And one of my mom's good friends when I was growing up was an architect. So I sort of kind of learned about the profession through her.
Okay.
And then actually mostly my mom, but both my parents spent time at Cornell. So I sort of knew about that school.
When you were going through school, were you also working with like your hands? Like I went to Georgia Tech, and we had, definitely some architecture students, and like, I would always see them walking around with, I guess it was like plastic buildings that they would like be cutting out and like this crazy stuff. But then also see like a lot of computer work as well. Like, was it a lot of like theoretical stuff, or were you still getting to kind of use that artistic physical sensibility that you've got?
Yeah. I mean, Cornell's definitely known for being a theory school,
okay.
But we did have a pretty nice wood shop, metal shop, which I spent a lot of time in, but probably more than most of the people there. In fact, I did more metal work there than I did really woodworking. And a lot of that was sort of early on in the first few years, and then that kind of dropped off as I moved up in years.
But, so was the metalworking, like, was that, like, how did that... how's that a part of, I guess, the curriculum? Like, were you using that to build models and stuff? Or was that just, you were just using the metal shop because you had access to it?
Some of both. I mean, first year, they definitely had us doing a lot of, making things in the shop. But then, once we got into second and third and fourth year, it got more into just using paper and chipboard and okay. plastic.
Gotcha.
And less kind of dirty stuff.
Yeah.
But
that's the architecture stuff is so crazy. I went to Frank Lloyd Wright's, the house in Arizona. I forget the name of it.
Uh-huh.
And I had no exposure just to the whole architecture world. And they were just talking about, some of the doorways were really small. So you would kind of be compressed and you go into this big room. And so you'd feel that like compression and release. And that kind of was the first time that I thought about like your structure can have an impact on the way you feel, not just the way things look, but the actual physical space of it.
Right.
That whole world is just wild. So, when you got out, you mentioned you went into commercial. Did you go straight into that out of college?
Pretty much. I went and lived at home for 3 years and worked there at two different smallish firms. In fact, that was the time that I did a few houses or sort of worked on that kind of stuff or that scale of stuff.
Was the actual work of being an architect, was it what you expected?
I've found slowly over the years that what I really loved in school isn't a whole lot of what you do out in the profession,
okay.
You know, the building and the design and that kind of stuff. I mean, buildings don't build themselves. So you have to deal with people to get things done. It becomes much more of a political exercise than a design exercise.
So was it a larger firm that you worked for?
When I was in Hawaii, I worked at a little tiny firm. It was like three of us. And then that lasted a year. And then I moved to a bigger firm that was, I don't know, 50 or 60 maybe.
Okay. Oh, so you went back to Hawaii after college?
Yeah.
Okay.
Then I went back to graduate school in Boston for 2 years. And then once that was done, I came out here to Portland.
Okay. Where in Boston?
At the Harvard GSD.
Okay. Gotcha. Which is, that's always funny because I feel like when I hear people talk about going to Harvard, they usually refer to it as that school in the school in Boston.
yeah.
But that especially on my side of things, I was engineering, so it was like it usually be like engineering at MIT or something. But that's crazy. Okay, so did you go then back to Hawaii after you got out of graduate school?
No, then I came out here to Portland.
Okay, then to Portland. Was that just work again that brought you out there?
A little bit. I was kind of finishing up there, and I didn't have any ties to anyone, and I didn't want to go home after that. I really could go wherever I wanted to.
Okay.
And Portland was sort of the last city that didn't have some big problem with it. You know, like
yeah.
Like going to Chicago seemed too cold in the winter, and going to Los Angeles or Seattle seemed too crowded, and I would need to live so far out of the city. It would just be hard to live there.
So was there a job in particular like you had lined up, or did you kind of move out to Portland and start looking?
Kind of both. I had talked to someone from the firm that I ended up working for here in Portland had come out to Boston, you know, at our little jobs fair. So I had spoken with him. So when I went out to Portland, I had that connection. But I did go around and talk to several different firms before I worked there. So
this whole time then, when you're a professional architect, are you also woodworking? Or are you doing the smaller scale stuff just on the side as a hobby?
Yeah, no, that's kind of when I started to really do woodworking as a hobby.
Okay.
I bought a house not too long after I moved out here, and it was a fixer, and that was really my first big woodworking project was fixing up that house. I redid the kitchen and the two bathrooms and you know, all doing all of the, you know, the millwork and the finishing in that house.
So did it just keep building, like, I guess from there? Because I mean, I know a lot of people, they'll buy houses and they'll wind up just like with a table saw or a chop saw or something. But you have definitely gotten quite a few bit more tools from there to just keep on growing.
Yeah, I mean, I started with my grandfather's tools that I brought out here. Then from there, I've been slowly adding to that. We moved. I then got married and we sold that first house and bought a second house where we lived for 5 years or so. And that house had a bigger basement, so I had a bigger shop in that house.
And was it still mostly kind of the home improvement style projects at this point?
Yeah, mostly. I started to get into turning at that point.
Okay.
I think that was about 2006 or seven, I think.
Was that your first experience turning, like when you actually did it yourself, or had you been exposed to it before?
Yeah, no, I really hadn't. I decided I should get a lathe, so I found one on Craigslist, and I drove out to the guy's place. He lived out in the country, and he told me about turning bowls and turning bigger stuff, and he clued me into the whole old tool kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Finding the older stuff. So just from going out this one day to this random guy on a farm somewhere that I just happened to find on Craigslist, you know, totally changed the course of what I do. It's kind of funny.
Those older tools. Why do you think you've been drawn to that?
I think, to start with, you can get so much more for your money.
Yeah.
You know, you can buy into a much bigger class of machinery. You know, like my planer, I I think I spent $450 for it. And it's a planer. I think that when it was new in the 70s, was like $22,000 or $24,000.
Good Lord.
You know, and it works as well as it worked when it was first made. You know, it's not like it wears out. But, you know, it's not the shiny new planer, you know, that's sitting at the store. So
like, are you finding those on Craigslist? Do you just kind of stumble across stuff? Like, how do you find new tools now?
Mostly at auctions. And that's kind of slowed down over the last few years just because times have been pretty good. So places aren't closing. And then I've found some stuff off of Craigslist.
And these are like industrial auctions, right?
Right.
I have.
Yeah, you need to be ready to move stuff when you buy something.
Yeah, I had Chris, who's from Make Everything, and he's building out his shop now, and he had mentioned that those big auctions were how he got a lot of the stuff, and that it's like you kind of buy it, you don't know if it's going to work, but it could be thousands of pounds, and you got to get it out of there, and it just sounded crazy.
Yeah.
What was your kind of best find? Was it that that planer?
That was probably one of the best deals I've gotten.
Okay.
And my big bandsaw was another one. That was one I bought it without really knowing how I was going to get it moved. But, you know, once the auction's over, you start kind of talking to people and, you know, you make friends with a forklift driver and, you know, on this guy that I just met there was super nice and knew about how to rig things, helped me move it from where it was in the shop to my trailer. Then the shop owner came out and helped me tie it down to the trailer correctly so it wouldn't tip over on that drive home.
That's awesome.
But, you know, it's just kind of, you know, you just kind of talk to people and you just kind of get it done.
Yeah. Did you ever get like nervous going to those situations? Like I'm going to stick out. Like I'm not like your normal, like industrial guy walking into this kind of stuff. Or have you always kind of been comfortable just kind of figuring out as you go?
Yeah. No, I mean, when you're there, you know, it's like everyone kind of looks the same, you know, it's not like you can really tell who's there for this reason or that reason. So it's more, you know, buying something and not really knowing if you can get it home.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's been some things I haven't bought because I knew it, I just wasn't going to be able to get it home.
What's your like wife think when you come home with some of these like crazy tools?
She's actually been really good about that.
That's good.
In fact, there's even been I was at a garage sale once. My cord is under my. There we go.
No worries.
Sorry.
You're fine.
Now I was at a garage sale once, and there was a little joiner that I kind of wanted, but I wasn't really sure if I should get it, and you know, whether I'd really use it. And she was kind of pushing me to get it because she knew if I didn't get it, I would then complain that I didn't get it.
Yeah. You, I guess, continued to grow the wood shop. When did you kind of switch to doing this more on a full-time basis?
That was 2012. It was kind of the perfect storm where things had slowed down a lot at work and there wasn't a whole lot to do. And the kids were just starting school. So it would be really nice if I was home for them. You know, since there's, you know, school only goes till 2:15 or whatever. So
yeah,
it made sense to be home for them. And then I had just built this giant shop in our backyard, and it didn't make any sense to leave it dormant all week, you know, and then just be in there on Saturday. So it made sense to start using it full time.
And at that point, like, were you doing custom work? Was it? I imagine like the YouTube and all that kind of stuff really wasn't much of a thing at that point. Like, was like custom? Was that kind of where income would come from?
It was still mostly house kind of stuff. I mean, the current house we have was a little bit of a fixer too. I mean, there's still projects to do even now. And I suppose that was the other thing, was that was right about the time YouTube started to give people the ad revenue.
Got it.
So it seemed like I could do something where I could do the woodworking and separate that from the money making, and make the video work be the thing that makes the money.
Yeah, yeah. So on the video side of things, so I'm doing like the reverse search on your channel. And I think you probably have the oldest video of anyone I think I've had on, including like Jimmy DiResta and all those guys. You're turning a log is looks like it's 12 years old. Did you have a video background at that point, or kind of why did you decide just to throw a video up there? Because I imagine in 2006 that wasn't nearly as easy as it is today.
Yeah, I mean, well, okay. So at work, I kind of gravitated towards the computer rendering and kind of that kind of stuff, and less of the design and the, you know, getting stuff built end of the profession.
Okay.
So I had some experience with doing video and that sort of thing. Not like I was working at a movie studio or, you know, right, a video production place or, you know, something like that, but I could, you know, make something simple at that point.
Why did you decide to share it online?
I'd actually been sharing stuff around just with an email before that, you know, like pictures and flash videos and things like that.
Yeah.
So when YouTube came around, it seemed like it was kind of the perfect thing to start doing video with.
Yeah. Did you have like a newsletter, like, or did you just have a list of people you would email or share videos with?
Yeah, it was mostly just friends and that kind of thing.
You know,
it was sort of social media before social media.
Yeah, yeah. That's crazy. Okay, so you mentioned your shop, and that was not one of the first, but I definitely remember seeing that whole build. Was that something you had always wanted to do, like build your own shop from the ground up?
When we were looking for our current house, that was, you know, that was one of the things I told my wife, is it's got to have shop space. So when we found this place, it had a swimming pool with a structure over it. And I had thought I would turn that into shop space because it was 30 by 50. It just seemed huge. But it turned out the structure over the pool wasn't really as it was starting to come apart, and there were some rotten bits, and so the more we looked at it, the more it didn't look like it made sense to try and refurbish that structure and then kind of shoehorn a shop into it.
Yeah.
So we pulled that whole structure down, dug the pool out, and then built the shop.
And I'll make sure to include a link, because you definitely have a couple of videos walking through the whole build process, but which is just wild. But how did you approach building your shop as an architect, or like how do you think you looked at it differently than maybe like just a normal traditional woodworker would approach building out a shop?
I think I was trying to do something that would fit in with the neighborhood, and, you know, didn't just build a metal box in the backyard. So I think we were trying to do a little more with material and a little more with the form of the box, basically. And then I think also just trying to look at it as a problem and all the different parts of that problem, like keeping the view and how the doors would work and how you would get things to and from the shop, and you know, instead of just thinking of it as square footage that's, you know, going to be over here kind of thing. I think that's kind of one of the differences. I think that's why it took a while, and we had kind of a hard problem too, where we're in sort of urban, suburban, hilly area. And we didn't have, I mean, we had room, but not a lot of room, and getting stuff around to the back of the house was difficult.
So how long was that process from start to finish?
It took about a year of planning and getting people lined up to do it. And then it was kind of the spring and summer to do the landscaping. And then that fall, they built the structure kind of through the fall and the winter. And then that spring, I built the inside stuff, you know, the ceilings and the wiring and the walls and all of that.
So it sounds like about like 2.5 to 3 years almost, it sounds like.
Probably two-ish.
Two-ish, okay. What was it like working in there for the first time? Like, was there a moment where like, okay, I can begin doing work in here? Or was it still kind of like a work in progress?
Yeah, it kind of happens. I mean, especially when you do something yourself, it happens so gradually.
Right.
There isn't really a point where... I guess I had a move-in day where we moved all the big tools in. And I suppose that was kind of the start. But of course, you know, the stuff was just moved in. It still had to all be set up and kind of moved into its location and all that kind of thing. So.
Yeah. Do you ever have people come over that may not know your background, especially on the woodworking side of things, and like they walk in there not really knowing what to expect?
A little bit.
Okay.
I mean, if people aren't into the woodworking, they usually don't end up out in the shop. So.
Gotcha. Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. That totally makes sense.
But I definitely had a range of visitors from, you know, people who know me from the YouTube stuff, and then family members that, you know, don't know me from the YouTube stuff, but just know me, you know, through family or friends or whatever.
Yeah. So, wood turning at least seems like if there was like a through line on your, especially woodworking projects, I feel like there's like wood turning has been something that's always been a part of what you do. Why do you think that's always kind of stayed with you?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I like doing it.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I mean, I like the segmented stuff. It's something that used to be true of photography, but it isn't anymore, but it's still true of the segmented turning where you sort of make this thing, this blob of wood all glued up, and then you turn it and it becomes this new thing, you know, because you kind of find the shape that's in it. You know, that used to be true with photography where you take a bunch of pictures on film and then you'd have to wait a while to see what it was you got. It's sort of the same thing where there's that separation where you glue up all this wood kind of knowing what you're going to get, but you're kind of guessing, you know, and then you turn it and then it becomes this new thing. And it's sort of the thing you thought it was, but it's also something that you've not seen before.
Have you ever been really surprised after that gap?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think that first Christmas ornament, I made a pattern on it thinking it was going to be a Christmas tree, and it was, but I didn't realize the negative space between the Christmas trees was going to be the same pattern. So you get the solid of the Christmas tree, and then the sort of snow or the sky between the Christmas trees is the same shape, and it makes this even pattern, but it's also something that looks familiar at the same time.
Yeah.
Is
that the one, it's about, I guess about 5 years old.
Yeah, probably at least. Yeah.
I'll make sure to include that one in the show notes as well. Something else that I think is super unique about your stuff is you'll have these super old tools. But then you have this massive CNC just sitting there too. So you have this really cool mix of like old and modern. How has that been? Have you always enjoyed just kind of pushing on the technology side of things as well as kind of the throwback to what's always worked?
Oh yeah. No, that's what I really like is mixing, you know, the old and the new, the modern and the handmade or the, you know, the digital and the dirty.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, I love like scanning something into the computer and you sort of get the, you know, the dirt of whatever it was gets brought in, you know, and then you take that and you make it, you know, with a CNC machine or a 3D printer, you know, and then you rescan that thing and, you know, and it, this kind of going back and forth between those two worlds ends up kind of giving you that thing that you didn't know what it was going to be. For the first few years, the channel was woodworking stuff, and I think everyone kind of thought that's what it was. And I did the old tools, and it, but really in the background and at work, I've always been into the computer end of things. So I think, you know, when I brought the CNC machine in, that seemed, I think to a lot of the viewers, it seemed really different, or, you know, almost even odd, but in a way, that was just me bringing in the other half, you know, into the shop.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I imagine you were still doing a lot of that digital fabrication stuff before, but then with CNC, like that could just turn into the real world for you.
Right. Yeah.
So were you always doing then SketchUp and all that kind of stuff as well?
Oh, yeah.
For a while. Okay. Is that still what you use mostly?
Oh, as far as modeling?
Yeah, as far as modeling.
Yeah, for some stuff, use SketchUp. Also, a little... I've started to learn Fusion 360 a little bit.
Okay, yeah.
Mostly because it's got the CAM software right as part of it, so it makes it easy to go between the model and the CNC machine.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Fusion is wild. It's so cool what you can do with it.
Yeah.
So go into some of your turning projects or just some of your projects in general. I mean, some of the processes are just so like, I have no clue how we even thought of this. Like I'm going to the CNC, then I'm going back to the whatever, then I'm going to CNC this shape out of this shape. And like your, even like your eight ball or your eye, especially just these wild things. Do you just have like, I want to build X and I'm going to figure it out? Or is there like a process you want to try out, like kind of what is your, I guess, creative process in starting a project?
Yeah, it's kind of different. I mean, sometimes I have a vision of what I want, like with the eyeball, and then it's the process is figuring out how to build it. I feel like the best projects are the ones where the project almost feels like it takes over a little bit. Hmm. Like it starts to guide how things are done. I mean, that's a little more of the video stuff, I think, than the woodworking. But it's definitely, I've found you kind of just have to have an idea and then you just have to start working on it. And it may seem like you can't do it at first, but you just start. And you know, some things work and some things don't, and you just kind of keep going. I mean, I think that was true with building the CNC machine, the first one, that it seemed really daunting. Like I just didn't see how I was going to be able to make this thing, but I just started making the base and then I had the base made and then I started attaching parts to it and it just kind of went together and it was actually... went really smoothly.
Yeah. But. It might be the CNC. What was the I guess most daunting project from the beginning that you've done?
I mean, definitely the CNC machine.
Okay.
And I suppose that first house that I did.
Either a CNC or a house. Yeah. Okay. That's good. Yeah.
Well, like the kitchen would have been, but that was the second time I was rebuilding a kitchen, so I sort of knew what to expect. So
what do you have now CNC wise in your shop?
The machine itself.
Yeah.
It's a CNC router parts.
Okay, gotcha. Machine. It's like the kind of the kit build.
Yeah, it's their 4-foot by 8-foot kit, and then I've got a four more feet of a length attached to it.
Oh, geez, so massive. So you could, I mean, you're just throwing even whole sheets of plywood on that.
Yeah,
that's sweet. So so switching to the video side of things for a minute, I think in the making world, I think your name is probably one of the few that I hear people use it as a verb. So like people will shoot an intro, they'll be like, man, you like Frank Howarth that. And everyone knows like, oh, you just did stop motion or you did something like just wild. But especially on the stop motion side of things, because you've already mentioned that like architecture played into that. But I imagine you did do much stop motion in architecture, or I could be wrong. Like how did that come about?
Yeah, no, that's just something I kind of did on my own. I mean, I took one seminar in graduate school that was on that kind of thing.
Okay.
So I did a little bit there, but we learned more kind of theory and stuff. It was some hands-on stuff, but so I've done a little bit of that in school, but and then it's just kind of been on my own. And then, you know, in school we had one of those giant cameras, you know, that shoots down onto a table. Yeah. And you know, and that's how we did it. So once we started to get digital cameras, and you could basically make a stop motion for free because you didn't have to develop anything, it made it really tempting to just start playing around with that. You know, I was doing the woodworking as a hobby, and kind of that's what I was doing. So I started doing some of the stop motion with that, and it kind of helped. If there's some concept that I'm trying to get across, it's kind of nice to, you know, to be able to use that.
Yeah, is the goal, because I definitely want to get into some of the mechanics of the stop motion, especially for people that have never tried it. But like doing something that I imagine takes a really long time, like is the goal always to like explain something in a way that's more clear? Like why go through all the difficulties and the time to put that in your videos?
Sometimes it's to explain things. But it's also just to do something cool, you know.
Gotcha. Right. Which is usually the best reason.
Yeah.
So today, like I was actually just watching your last, the Carver's Mallet. Like, would you do stop motion now? Like, are you doing that with software, with like unink screening and all that kind of stuff? Like, what's like a normal setup? If someone listening like wanted to try that out.
And really, I'm just putting the camera on a tripod, and then I've got a remote trigger release for the camera. So you know, so you don't have to touch the camera to take a picture.
Right.
And then you just do, you know, you just move stuff around and take pictures as you're doing it. I mean, I think it's the kind of thing you just have to do and then look at it, and then say, yeah. Oh, okay, when I move it like that, that's what it ends up looking like.
Yeah. So will you just import all those pictures then into like Final Cut or Premiere or something and just play them back real quick?
Yeah. I mean, you can bring in stills. You can have Premiere see a series of stills as a set. So you can bring them in as frames in a video. So it's really easy to bring in the photos, then work with them as video basically.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, you know, I hear about people bringing in each frame and then setting them to the right length and putting, you know, it's just like you really don't have to do that.
That sounds
that's
torture.
Really labor intensive.
Yeah. Yeah. So is it like 24 frames a second? Like, so are you taking 24 pictures basically for every second?
Well, The video is at 30 frames a second, and I usually slow everything down by 50%. So it's about it's 15 frames a second.
Oh, really? So the picture is up there for whatever a 15th, like you said, of a second.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. That's wild. So with all of the tools and everything you have in your shop now, are there still projects you're like, I wish I had X to be able to do this type of project, or like, are, do you kind of like how you have your shop set up and the stuff that you're able to make currently?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I have what I need. I mean, there's sort of like, I'd love to have a double-ended disc sander where I have a coarse grit on one side and then a finer grit on the other side. But that's not really a function that I don't have. It would just make it easier to do stuff.
Yeah. And then on, I guess, kind of wrapping up, looking into next year in 2019, do you plan out like future projects, or is it like, hey, I have this thing in the house that I need to build, or kind of what does that process look like for you when you're just thinking about planning, or yeah, what's that look like?
No, we're with my wife, we're always talking about future stuff, and I have a big master list, but it's always in flux and it's always changing.
Yeah,
you know, pretty much daily. As far as, you know, it's like it would help if I knew like what the next project was, but it's always in flux, you know. So sometimes it's just, you know, it's like, I want to do this thing, but I've got to wait until I get the right router bit, or I get, you know, find the right resin or something, you know, or it's a weather related thing where I need to shoot outside, or I need to find the right scenery for something, or it's something in that, you know, there's a never ending list of house projects to work on.
Yeah.
And you know, that kind of depends on what's going on with the family and what's going on in the house and that kind of thing.
Yeah, totally. Is there a technology or a technique? I mean, we've definitely talked about CNC, but is there something that you're excited about now that you're kind of thinking about, how can I incorporate this into what I'm already doing?
I'm supposed to be getting, in fact, hopefully Wednesday afternoon, I should be getting a fourth axis lathe thing for the CNC, so I can do lathe kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, that'll be kind of a big new thing.
Oh, so will you still want to turn by hand then?
Oh yeah, I think so.
You'll just be able to do the super precise stuff now.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Well, I appreciate your time in chatting with us. For people, if they haven't checked out your stuff, which I don't know who that would be, but is it just frankmakes.com? Is that the best place you tend to?
Right. Yeah. 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 That site's sort of just a placeholder for links to my different social media stuff.
Got it. And it's just Frank Howarth on YouTube.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, I appreciate your time and chatting with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Totally. All right, thanks for hanging around to the end. This is where I give you guys a quick update about the things I have going on in my very own shop. And this is going to be a quick update because I have gotten slammed with Christmas orders over on Etsy. I do these football stadium signs. And so holiday season is definitely on. And so my CNC is running pretty much nonstop whenever I'm home, trying to get those knocked out. Also finishing up the video for the end table build that I have been posting about a good bit. If you guys would like to follow along with that, hit me up on Instagram at the Make or Break Shop, as well as the Make or Break Shop over on YouTube. Looking forward to a lot of really fun projects, especially once these orders get out the door, and looking into 2019. I would love to know the things that you guys are working on. Again, hit me up on Instagram, Make or Break Shop. Hope you are doing amazing. And until next time, go make or break something in your shop. See you guys.